All right. Well, I hope everyone's enjoying the M-Theory Fest this morning. Gordy, Constantine, Peach spoke about like a lot of things that we've been doing in M-Theory. Gordy spoke about some of the stuff that I've been working on. So I'm talking about more of stuff that's in progress. So first, I will just give a brief overview of M-Theory. I'll discuss the Wiener LSP. This is basically work that a couple of months Gordy asked me, how generic is it that the Wiener LSP is what we get in M-Theory? He also very nicely actually told me the answer to that question, which it should be very generic. And we'll discuss why it is that the LSP is stable and how we might try to find an R parity in M-Theory. So this was all spoken about in great detail. By Constantine. He discussed how all the moduli are stabilized. He did it in detail. The G2 moduli are stabilized by hidden sector Gugino condensation. Again, that was all discussed in detail. He also mentioned that the Suzy breaking is dominated by hidden sector Masson fields. This is basically a necessary condition to get a de-Sitter vacua. The scalar masses are gravity mediated. They're approximately the Gravitino mass, and that needs to be about 10 TeV. That's greater than 10 TeV. That's a necessary condition for BBN. That's what Gordy spoke about. And since the Masson fields do not appear to leading order in the gauge kinetic function, the Gugino masses are suppressed relative to the scalar masses, and they find that they get a Wiener LSP. Okay, so you've also heard about the non-thermal miracle. Moduli dominate the early universe and decay into LSPs. The gravitational mass and moduli masses need to be greater than about 10 TeV for a successful BBN. And when you do all the calculations, you get the approximately correct relic abundance, which is what everyone showed this morning. Also, Gordy spoke about this earlier, that this probably is a generic thing in string theory, since Suger-Lagrange can suggest at least one moduli mass about the Gravitino mass. And that's also work in progress. Okay. Also, you heard that there's rich LHC phenomenology. We have heavy scalars, but we have light Gugino, so we have a light Gluino, which will produce in pairs. It's strongly interacting, so that's a pretty high cross-section. It's about Picoborn. LHC gives us what they promise. That'll be about 100 events. But by the end of this year, it would be 100,000 events over 5 years. So it will likely decay to four tops emitting energy. This is a signal of really gravity mediation, where you have heavy scalars, and they're approximately unified. The stops run light to RGE flow, and the gluons will decay through an off-shell stop in top. That would decay into a top and an LSP. And that's a very rich signal. We get lots of leptons, lots of jets, lots of B jets from this. And this could be discovered early and easily at the LHC. Okay, so now let's try to answer the question about how robust is a prediction at the LSP as we know. Well, just some basic MSSM review. The LSP is a combination of Beano, Wiener, and Gugino components. And the important thing is that even a small Gugino component can have large effects on direct detection of dark matter. Xenon is going to come out with the results in a couple of months, and they're looking at orders of magnitude greater in scattering cross-section than what CDMS looked at. And so the scattering mostly takes place through exchange of a Higgs. And so the scattering goes like the Gugino component, so even a small amount can have large direct detection effects. But in order to know the Gugino components, we need to know the Gugino mass, so we need a theory of the mu term. The G2 MSSM, they just assume some Juicy Masseur mechanism without actually understanding what suppressed it and how it would be generated. And while we're at it, we need to answer the question, why is the LSP stable? We need a symmetry to ensure the stability of the Lyapunov supersymmetric particle. Okay, so let's first see what other people did. Witten constructed a geometric discrete symmetry that does first, it forbids the mu term while allowing the triplet mass, so he saw double triplet splitting. The symmetry also forbids dimension 4, dimension 5 proton decay. And it forbids R parity violating operators. So this is pretty good. That's exactly what we want, except the symmetry has to be broken since mu cannot be zero. I mean, mu sets the the masses for the Churginos, and we know from LEP that if mu is 0, this is, we have a Churgino about the mass of MW, and we know that's ruled out, so mu cannot be 0. Yeah. Well, he forbid it in the theory appearing anywhere. Yeah. He never discussed how it was broken. He just said there's a symmetry. So how this be broken? Well, we may expect, since this is a geometric symmetry, that the moduli would be charged under the symmetry, and they'll get VEVs, they get F terms about, they get VEVs around M Planck, F terms about the Gugino masses, and that this is, and this will generically reintroduce the dangerous couplings that we sought to forbid. Yes. So what would be X, though? X would be some...
No, but that is possible.
Yes. So you can... That would be like the NMSSM, how they solve that. You would want some U1. I think the biggest problem with trying to do that is you'd have to answer the question, why doesn't that X also... Why doesn't that symmetry that gave you X at 2 at G also forbid the triplet mass? Right, and generically it will break our parity too, and I'll discuss if there's a way that we don't have to do that. Okay, so so let's see what these guys will do. Well, the axion shift symmetries, which were discussed in the early talks, those will forbid superpotential couplings, at least they'll be instanton suppressed. But the mu term and our priority violating couplings are allowed in the killer potential. Basically, it would be a Judah-Shea mass organism where the moduli transform and then their F terms generate a mu term. They should be imaginary components because of the axion symmetries, and they should transform into some complex representation, so that's why I've written it out like this. But the exact same thing will happen. They'll generate our priority violating terms. They'll be suppressed of order m1/2 over m Planck. And we can see what this tells us. Well, we have baryons and violating numbers. Those are the terms in the bottom of the last slide. They introduce all these violate either baryon or lepton number. And I get couplings, and they're about suppressed m1/2 over m Planck. This will generate, I guess what's really is dimension 4 proton decay, but with really suppressed operators. But it's really dimension 6 because there's a VEV here. And if I calculate what this is, it's allowed. It's not ruled out, so I have indicated the proton. However, this will decay the LSP. The LSP will decay through an off-shell squark or slepton, and it will decay into, let's say, some combination of leptons and quarks, and the lifetime is pretty quick, except for these couplings are pretty suppressed. If I take the G2MSSM values, or what we would expect, I take the squark mass to be at 10 TeV, the LSP mass to be 100 GeV, this coupling go like m1/2 or m Planck, like 10 to the minus 15. I calculate the lifetime, 10 to 17 seconds. Now that's approximately the age of the universe, and you might think that's a success. I have a dark matter that's still around, so I should be done now. But however, this is actually ruled out by indirect detection experiments, because if this was decaying right now, which a very large rate, I would have observed all these quarks and leptons coming from the decays. And there are experiments like Pamela that look for these, and they don't see a huge excess in the number of quarks and leptons. So there's actually a much stronger constraint on the R parity violating couplings and proton decay, and it's actually the LSP lifetime. Okay, so where's R parity coming from? So we can try a local continuous U1, since the moduli are uncharged under these. So which U1s? Well, I'm going to try to see if I can find one that comes from a simple gut group. I don't want any additional U1s. They're difficult to understand in global embeddings. The monotremes will break them, and it's not very generic that I'll have these sitting around. Although, if I had additional ones, I can get R parity, and that's what a lot of people do. And I'll show an example later. I want my theory to be chiral. I want it to be nominally free. And I don't want these to be accidents, so I can look at these well-known cases, E6, SO10, SC5, and it's well-known that these contain R parity. This is known probably before I was born. So let's do a quick review, people who aren't familiar with this. So Sklansky is my go-to for all group theory. I can break E6 to SO10 down to SC5. Each time I get a UN factor, this is coming from SO10, this is coming from the E6. I have my 27, it contains, well, let's actually work up. I can put, most people know the SC5 model building. I can put matter in the 10 and plus a 5 bar. I also can have a right-handed neutrino that fits very well into 16 of SO10. My Higgses can fit very nicely into 10 of SO10. That all fits very nicely into a 27 of E6. Now, both these symmetries actually contain R parity. This one is basically B minus L. This is an additional one, very often used to generate a mu term dynamically with an SVEV. But both these contain R parity, and you can see because all the matter fields have odd charge under these symmetries. The Higgses all have even charge. So any coupling that appears at superpotential has to contain an even number of matter fields. That is exactly what R parity is. These are U1s, but they'll have to be broken, and that's where the problem's going to come in. So how will the really non-abelian symmetries be broken? Well, they can be broken by Wilson lines. We can break E6, SO10, down to standard model across U1 factors. Big problem is this B1L-like symmetry cannot be broken by Wilson lines, as we discussed. There are lots of different models that come from E6. There's flipped SU6. We can Wilson line E6, SO10 cross U1, hopefully break those U1s with a 16-16 bar, then further break those with a 10-10 bar. We can do E6 down to flipped SU5, broken with 10-10 bar. We can try SU6, Patti Salam. And these cases are actually not going to work, and I'll just go through the general ideas why they don't work. So let's say we Wilson line E6 down to standard model cross U1. By standard model, I mean SU3 cross SU2 cross U1, not SU5. So the U1 can be broken. The only field that I can, if I'm living under these M-theory restrictions, the only, my fields must come, the charges of my field are determined by what higher representations they come from. And so my right-handed neutrino, which I can use to VEV UNX, has charge 5. Well, this will break R parity because it's odd under R parity. Under the symmetry. So we can hope to generate a small VEV. I mean, there are restrictions on the Z prime mass, so let's say it's a TV or something like that. But even if we could, we can calculate what couplings I would generate, and I would generate this term in Killer potential, even if I also use a discrete symmetry to suppress things. This would, by Judy Seymour's theorem, mix my lepton and my Higgs. I can do a rotation on the Higgs and the leptons and give me my lepton violating term, M3Fs, which goes like M3Fs are in Planck, which is exactly what I had before, and this is not going to work.
Why do you have to have
Well, because basically, part of my motivation, which I said you don't have to take, and I'll give an example, is that I want a simple gut group. I don't want additional UN factors because it's difficult to understand. Right. I would discuss that example, but that's not a simple gut group. I mean just one gauge factor. That's what I meant by simple. A simple group. Yeah. And I will give the example of exactly how you do what you just said. One can try a flipped SC5 model, and these are, besides the fact these are really, really hard to build, I can break with the Wilson line E6 cross SC5 cross UNX. This can be broken by a VEV of a 10-10 bar. It's nice because it's off double triplet splitting, and it allows me to break a SC5 with lower representation. Again, it'll break R parity because these have R charge. But somehow I'm going to generate a Gutskill VEV, and that Gutskill VEV is pretty good because it gives very, very large mixing, and the LSPTK is just as before. Now, so we're talking about, well, let's say I want additional U1s, and I required those U1s to come from E8, and I didn't impose any of this simple gauge group stuff. Well, E8 gives me 6, which I see 3, gives me 2 U1s, which I'll just say are generated by lambda 3 and lambda 8 of the Gell-Mann matrices. Well, one way in Yar parity is say, well, suppose what I have at the low scale, I mean at the high scale or low scale theory, is UNX, some combination of this UNX, B minus L, and let's say UN3, where my matter fields come from, which I charge 0, basically coming from one component of my SC3 triplet, and whereas right-handed neutrinos come from one of these, and so I can take a combination of UNX and UN3, which is at the, which I have at the high scale, and I can get the neutrino BEV in such a way that it breaks this to exactly R parity, and that can be done. But that would need to be explained as to why exactly that happens. And that's a perfect path, and basically, since E6 didn't work, maybe this is the answer. Okay, so let's go back to this discrete symmetry, because, well, Witten came up with it. So he just basically worked out, he gave charges to these fields. You see that the triplet and the Higgs down have different charges, because the discrete symmetry is a combination of a geometric symmetry of the moduli and the Wilson line. So this is essentially how he forbid the triplet mass, the Higgs mass, rather than the triplet mass, by giving them different charges. So we work out what these charges have to be, because I want up Yukawa couplings, I want down Yukawa couplings. I choose to want my Majorana neutrino masses, and I want triplet masses. And I have 4 equations, I have 5 charges. I'm left with one uncharged field, which one charge left over, which is sigma. And I look at what the charges are under these terms that I don't like. And I look at the new term, it has minus 5 sigma plus pi. 5 sigma pi, and as long as sigma is chosen such that this not equals to 2 pi mod n, I have a discrete symmetry that forbids a mu term and R parity. However, like we said before, this mu term has to be generated, and it should be generated somewhere around at least 100 GeV or higher. I think the bound's like 110. Actually, that's redundant. It turns out that's redundant. Okay, so can the symmetry be broken? Can the symmetry be broken and preserve R parity? And the answer is yes, and that's what you would expect. And it's a very simple example is take Z6 with sigma equals to 2 pi over 6. So you've chosen your charges. I look at what charges my mu term has, what charges R parity operators have. And if for some reason the VEVs of moduli transforming with charge 2-6 get VEVs and not other moduli, well, then I will preserve R parity and I'll generate the mu term. It breaks this to Z2. But that asks you a question again, just like with the with the same case with U1s, it asks why we live in this vacuum. Why do the other moduli that have other charges live at some fixed point of the symmetry, and why do only these get VEVs? Okay, so I'll conclude with M theory is awesome, and I'm sure you'll figure that out over the past 5-6 hours. R parity is non-generic in these models, but there are ways of getting them, but it'd be very hard to construct it. Geometric symmetries may or may not be enough. One would have to understand the moduli much better. And a simple gauge group, I mean a simple gauge group models of M3 will not provide R parity. So where do we go from here? Well, we can look at non-gut U1s, but that's pretty ugly. We can understand the moduli vacuum. We can also try to understand monogamy, so I can have combinations of U1s that survive, and I can have something like SC5 cross U1. Thank you. Right. This is. Don't know yet, right? Yeah. Right. What's more into the question is how, and also we also want to know the value of the mu term because that is very has very important consequences. And essentially, I mean, I don't want to tell you the answer of what the value of the mutrium is before I actually understand why the ALSP is stable, because they're clearly related. And this is stuff we worked on in the last few months. And when we have a unique solution, we'll let everyone know.
Thank you.